Hare Krishna, this is the beginning of the second section of the second day and lecture Mainavina.
Okay, welcome back. This is the second part of the first lesson. We take more time for this because it seems to be a very important part, and there's a lot of questions, a lot of issues. Anybody knows what this stands for? No. What's the first thing you do when you approach someone?
Smile.
What's the first thing the people see when they see you?
And you're happy.
What's the second thing they see?
Sincere.
No.
Exactly.
What's the third thing they're looking at?
Shoes.
Shoes, exactly. Who said shoes? England, yeah, it could be French. That's the sequence. That's how people look. They see your smile, they see your shirt, they see your shoes. That's reality. So that's why always have a big smile. You can always win people over. Look respectable. Dress in nice clothes. If you are all torn and all, you know, mangled, people say, okay, you get a dollar, you know. But more than that, I don't think it's necessary. Shoes. In some places it's very important, in other places it's not so important, but people look on your feet. And if you're barefoot and you look like you just got off a buffalo, you just worked the rice field, then it's a little confusing sometimes. Especially in the West, you know, because people are very bodily conscious. They very much look how you dress, what you wear, you know, are you having a watch, you don't have a watch. Especially important if you do door-to-door or shop-to-shop industries. You shouldn't be wearing clothes which are nicer than they have. Or, you know, a watch which is more expensive than what they have. Makes them feel a little bit irritated. So there's all different things which you can learn with time. Now we're talking about interaction here. This is the middle part. I'm going to make it short. I'm going to make it brief. I'm going to make it quick. We're going to have demonstration and practical interaction this afternoon. So get ready to make your presentations. Interaction basically means they have the book in their hand and you present the book. You say a couple of things about the book. You ask a few questions, the right questions, and you satisfy their interest. Any questions to interaction? I said it's going to be quick.
Sure.
Yes.
What kind of questions?
What kind of questions? Anybody? What would be a good kind of question?
Have you heard something about yoga?
Have you heard something about yoga? Yes. What else? What is a good question?
Have you met a monk before?
Yes.
Who is Krishna?
Who is Krishna?
You know who Krishna is?
You ask them, yes.
Yes, you can ask
them. Who is Krishna? Yes. What else?
How are you?
How are you? Yes. How's it going today? Huh?
I want to be more happy.
Yeah. What else?
What's your name?
Okay.
What are you working?
What's your job?
Are you interested in philosophy?
Are you interested in something? Is this a very good question?
No. Yeah.
Why is this not a good question?
They say no.
Because they will say no.
But the same thing.
There is a difference between open-ended questions, like how is it going today? You may say, like this, like that, mira, you know, it's bad, it's good. But all the questions which are asking for yes or no answers are usually to be avoided. Unless people, you're for sure that they're going to answer yes. Because if people say three times yes, you got yourself a sale. You can note that down in your little book. If people say three times yes, you've got yourself a book distributed. Money back guarantee. If
you get them to say three times in a row, yes, 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 the next thing is the book and the donation. Right? Have you ever tried it? Does it work? Okay, it's approved. FDA approval. So, the point before that was open-ended and closed-ended questions. Don't ask things which they can do. You know, are you interested in religion?
No.
I ask that if I want to get rid of somebody. If I want to, you know, offload somebody real fast, I ask a closed-ended question. And I get my no, and I'm happy that I got my no, because I can move on. That's the only time that I ask those questions. Always give people choices. The mind works in these ways, accepting, rejecting, sankalpa, vikalpa, either this or that. What do you prefer, history or philosophy, yoga or meditation, karma or reincarnation? Most of the people will go for it. The smart people will say, well, both. Or, why are you asking? And then you say, well, I'm just kidding, you know? I'm just trying to suss you out, like that. So don't be hung up. It doesn't matter so much the words you're using, but more the way you're using them. You get into psychology right a while after that. Ask questions. You ask the questions. He, you can write that down in your little or big books. He who asks the questions controls the conversation. Did you get that? Do you understand that? I'm asking you the question. I'm controlling the conversation. If you just do a lot of talking, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean a thing. They can just walk out anytime. But if you ask questions, the question mark, how does a question mark look like? How does it look like? The other way around? Oh my God. Because I'm always looking for this.
No, the other way around.
The other way around.
No.
I got a problem here. Okay. Alright. No, it's right. It's too much money. Okay, how does it look like? How does it look like?
It's like an ear.
Yeah. What is it? It's a hook. It's a hook. With a question, you hook people. If you ask people questions, you hook them to you. They cannot get away because we started this discussion here, you know? So you put out the right type of hooks and then you get the people, you reel them in like that. So use questions. You'll take some time this week to write down your questions, your proper questions. I want to hear them in a couple of days. What are the questions you're using? Good questions, appropriate questions. You're going to have to make a presentation. People are going to see whether it's going to hold, you know, it's going to be watertight or not. And these questions, you always can refine them, you can add to them, you can drop things, you can add things. But questions are very important. Let people do the talking and you direct them. Other points.
Sometimes I ask people, where are you from, or something like this, and they say, why do you need to know, or why is it so important? So what are you supposed to say when they...
What you're supposed to say? Well, you're supposed to be honest. You say, well, you know, we're doing this for all the people here at this town. So they say, well, I'm out of time. Then they say, well, welcome to this town. So you also get one. The point, the bottom line is always, you give them the book. I ask them, so are you from the city or are you from out of town? They say, I'm from the city. Then you say, oh, wonderful. Then you qualify and you give them the book. If they say, I'm out of town, oh, wonderful. You qualify. You get the book. So the answer is always the same. But if people get a little uptight, that usually means we're self-conscious. We are not so sure of what we're doing. And sometimes people ask, so why are you asking? I'm saying, yeah, well, I'm interested in you, you know. Where are you from? That you have to actually show genuine interest in the person. It can't just be a matter of speech. So what do you work? And then you look the other way while he's trying to talk to your ear or to your, you know, back of your head. You actually have to look the person in the eye and have a conversation. Otherwise people feel like, why am I talking to you for? You have to connect with people. actually listen to them, give them some feedback. So yeah, so what do you, what's your job? And they say, well, I'm a school teacher, this and that, and then you just change the topic. That doesn't make the person feel very good. So then you ask them, so are you very good at it? Do you like doing it? Are you teaching primary grade, you know, medium or more advanced or university, like that? Ask them one or two questions. Show some interest in the people. It makes a big difference. Okay, we're already getting ahead of ourselves. We're getting into psychology. I'm going to wrap up here with interaction because we're going to do some presentations. We're going to have different ways of how to present the books in different circumstances, different books, different strategies. Now it's just the basic mechanics. Closing the deal. That's usually a big deal. It's the other 50% where things can go wrong, they do go wrong, and how to avoid things from going wrong. Now, you can blow it or make it right from the start. If people get the wrong impression right in the beginning, that you're giving this away for free, you're giving them wrong ideas, then at the end it will become very difficult to make up for what you have already, you know, said or done in the past. So don't think, oh, at the end I'll figure it out somehow. You know, somehow, somewhere along the line, I'll make up for it. It doesn't work. Best thing to do is always, when you give the book, tell people, write in sentence number 3 or 5, people are giving a donation. Mention donation, mention money as early as possible. In this way, it's stuck in their mind, it's stuck in their brain. And you can always come back to it later on. Don't be scared to repeat key phrases, like Prabhu was saying, that you gotta have your, what do you call it? Your structure. No. The thing about a book, how not to get angry, what do you call that?
The art never get angry.
Yes. And what's that? That's your theme, right?
Yes.
That's like the basic theme, that's like the baseline. He always goes back to that. You can mention that in the beginning, in the middle, and at the end. So in the same way, when you're presenting things, at the end, when you're wrapping things up, obviously it comes to the money part. You want to close the deal, you want to wrap up the presentation, and so you can't just say, okay, now pay, because that's just not, you know, considerate. People don't like that, that's rude, right? So you gotta do it in a cultured way, in a nice way. So you tell them, okay, now, very nice, take this book, and then you tell the bit about the money. So how do you do that? Well, there's different ways of doing it. But usually, what I've seen work best is that I just ask, I tell people pretty much in the middle already that we're not selling these because we are monks and we're doing this as missionaries. And then I ask them, what do you think? How much would this book cost in the store? And I let them give the price. And then they'll say, like, which currency you want? What should we deal with? Rupees, dollars, or
euro?
Euros.
Lakhs.
Rupees. Okay, let's do rupees because we're here in India. So I ask them, how much would this cost in the store? And they'll say 300, 500, you know, like that. And say, yes, that's about what it costs in a bookstore. But today is your lucky day. Because we're not selling these like in bookstores, but people are just giving donations to help us print and distribute these books. So already they have set themselves the high number. Then you can always go down. You have to know people will always give you the lowest figure, which was mentioned, usually. If you say 100, 200, 500, 100 will come easy, right? But to get 500, not so easy. So then I tell them that usually people give 100. In some countries, it's a very clear thing. It's fixed price. No discussion, no bargaining, fixed price, flat out, like in India. Because otherwise, you're discussing money till the cows come home. You'll be arguing with the guy for 5 hours about 20 rupees. And that's not what you want to do if you don't want to waste your appetite, right? So you just say fixed price, 100 rupee, that's that. And sometimes somebody gives a little more, sometimes somebody only has 80 or 90, you also give them more. The main thing is, if you're hung up about the money,
the person will also be hung up about the money. If you don't have a problem with money, they will also not have a problem with money. It all depends on us. You remember consciousness creates what?
Reality.
So what's the reality? Reality is either that you're in an abundance consciousness and you feel that there is enough books, there is enough money, there is enough love out there to go around for everybody, or you're in the scarcity consciousness where you think it's recession, it's depression, it's scared, it's not enough, it's famine, it's desperation. And then you reflect that. And if you have on your forehead the sign that I'm going to be happy with 10 rupees, then 10 rupees is the best you're going to get. And if you have on your sign, on your forehead the sign, you know, 1 crore of rupees, then people will give you as much as they can give you. So it is something which is very psychological, but it is also something which is very... it's also a matter of technique. It's a matter of structure. You just have to have the right type of approach. You just have to have the right way of doing it. Are there any questions about the closing the deal and getting the money part?
Is it also affecting the questions? The air around is super natural air. It helps
us. What does that have to do? What does that have to do with getting the money?
You feel confident.
Yes, confidence is a big part in it. If people feel that you are scared, that you're not sure, that you're timid, that you're inhibited, that you're hung up, that you're stuck, that you're attached, they will find your weak point and they will go for it. And they will exploit it. And whether it be money, whether it be talking a lot, whether it be attachment to the opposite sex, whether it be mental speculation, Maya will find your weak point and she will hammer you. You know what hammering means? You take a hammer and you hammer somebody. It's not a nice thing to feel hammered, but that's exactly what happens. So it's our duty not to have those weak points. We have to improve our weak areas. Yes?
About, you said, mentioned the nation at the beginning as early as possible.
Yes.
I don't know. In Germany, as soon as they hear about Lakshmi, they just, you know, both turn out. But if they're interested, and at the end you mentioned about Lakshmi, interest is already there, they're ready to pay. Is it only my vision?
Yes. 2 points here. When you mention money in the beginning, don't rub it in. Don't, you know, and it's going to cost you money, you know, you have to pay. And they're like, oh, okay. Why? Because they're not yet convinced. They have not yet bought into the idea. They have not yet really gotten attached to the book. But, so that it doesn't happen what Vasudev Prabhu was speaking about, that they don't want to hear about it. Because you have said it right in the beginning, in sentence number 3. And you know that you said it, they know that you said it, it's very clear. But then still, they try to, you know, avoid it and forget about it. But then when you draw it to a close, you have done your homework. You have put it in. So it becomes clear. So don't go for the money thing when the person doesn't have the attachment to the book yet. But you have to see that there are people who will always try to conveniently forget about the fact that they have to pay. They will forget that there is a commitment. But that all depends on our presentation. Because I've seen personally that you can have one of these people a day or a week, or you can have one every 5 minutes. And it makes a big difference in your sanctity. It makes a big difference in your experience. So Krishna is very kind. He's showing us where is the points where we have to improve. And then we should ask all the other devotees, okay, how can I improve that? We should watch others, how they're doing it. I personally, I don't have a problem with money. I also don't have a problem with lack of self-esteem. I have other problems. So everybody's an individual. And not one person is better or one person is worse. We're all different. We're all individuals. But find out, analyze. That's why we have these skills worksheets. You know, find out where do you score the lowest? Honestly. And where do I have to improve?
Because that's where Maya will strike. That's where she's going to get you. Yes, I close.
Yeah. I'm just trying to get this mantra down. You said we're not selling these because we're monks and we're doing this as missionaries. How much do you think this will cost in the store? And they'll tell you 500 or 300 euros. And
so rupees, not euros.
That's right. Today is your lucky day. And then what do you say to them?
Because we're not selling them like what they would cost in the stores, but people are just giving donations to help us print and distribute these books. And I don't say this is the printing price, because everybody knows we're not giving them a printing price. Because it doesn't work that way. Like we discussed yesterday, that the paper price, the printing price, the wholesale price, the retail price, these are different prices, and everybody knows that. So you just tell them that this is the price. What are we giving them to the public?
So we're giving for a donation of X amount.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they can relate to that.
Okay, another question. This is a nice mantra. So I'm sure all the devotees here will be happy to receive, like, you know, a compilation of book distribution mantras. So
we can work on that. We can do that. But then I have seen also that it tends to get stereotyped. Because if you say what I'm saying, people will punch you in the face. And vice versa. Because you have to build your own project. I may sell books with arrogance, or with humor, or with, you know, with my obnoxious nature. Somebody else may sell books by being, you know, just very kind-hearted, or humble and meek, or being this or being that. So it's a very much an individual thing. If I can come across in my proud Swissness, I can do that because I'm paying the price for being in such a type of a body, gross and subtle. But you cannot because you have a different background. So you have to work with whatever talent Krishna has given you and convince people. That's why the most important selling point is just be yourself. Because nobody can argue with you because you are the way you are. That's what you get. It's just you, right? But as soon as you try to make some drama and put on a show, people will sense it and they feel this is artificial. You know, this guy's not for real. I'm not going to buy this. But if it's just your jolly good self, or your, you know, your happy, you know, trooper, or your, you know, arrogant, obnoxious, or whatever works, you know, be that. Like in certain countries, you can be very much straight and very much cutting. You can even be cynical, like when you're in New York City or in certain places. People like to be insulted. People like that you speak to them. In other cultures, in other places, it doesn't work at all. So it's time, place, and circumstance. It's just you have to know what works and what doesn't work. So that's why to issue a standard mantra book with "this is what works," that doesn't work. Because it's gotta be you. And you have to build up your own repertoire. So I can tell you, 150 mantras, but most of them won't work. Because like Arjuna, why did the astras work for him? Why? You know the answer why. Because he performed the tapasya, because he got the blessings of his superiors, and because he had the skill to use them. It's the same thing with mantras. So you have to build up your own. You can watch, you can hear, you can try. But it's got to be your own style. Yes?
I do feel it is necessary to have mantra. Because when you have lots of things on your plate, you know what to do with it. And the same with...
Have as little on your plate as possible. I was going to many countries and I did what Prabhupada was saying. Anathakarunali. I would learn a mantra in the local language. I didn't know what it meant. Just by phonetics. Olet kotalte, eriten henokilia, yukainanantamakir tuksa. That's Finnish. I don't know Finnish. But I just wrote down a 7 or a 5 sentence mantra. And I would just work this mantra. And it works. And you can do that in all the different languages. That's all it takes. I have a god sister in New York. She'd have a sign, because she'd lose her voice sometimes, that she'd have a sign, I'm sorry, you know, I lost my voice. These are nice books about yoga, meditation, karma, reincarnation. Please give a donation. God bless. And then it says $5 or $10. She go to people, she smiled to them, hand them the sign, they hand her the money and they walk away. No talk. Try it for a change. Don't be so dependent on your, you know, great oratory skills. Yes?
On the closing part, Prema Sankirtan shared with me something that you said. And regarding big donations, it's very helpful to get some large donations. People could fly out more. I tried during the Christmas marathon, I just started to go, a lot of people give 100 this time here in the U.S. People were good.
Yes.
Okay. Better than asking for 20, giving me 20.
Did you hear that, Mataji? You want to improve your Sankirtan skill. Did you hear that, what he was just saying? Can you repeat it, please?
Yeah, it's during Christmas time, and I just tell people, a lot of people give 100 this time of year. Give what you can.
And people?
People will give 100.
People will give 100 back?
Ask you for 20, and they give 20.
And you think it's impossible? $100? That's more money than I make in a week, you know? But you can't think like that. People go out shopping. They burn money. They spend money like water. Even here in India. You go to Kolkata, you go to a mall, people spend 1,000-2,000 rupees in an afternoon going to the movie, buying some ice cream, buying a shirt, buying a toy for the kid, you know, and some nappies. And 1,000-2,000 rupees are burned. You might not believe it because you don't have any kids. I have 3 kids. Money goes. And here you are and you think 100 rupees for a book? It's impossible. Or $100. To you, $100 might be, whoa, you know? But for that person, $100 might, you know, might not mean much. Have you seen businessmen, people that take out wads of money? Like $4,000 or $5,000? $4,000 or $5,000? They don't have to be drug dealers. You know, it's just people. They spend money. Because that's what they work for. They work for money. And they spend money. Not everybody's a Hare Krishna who walks around in a bed sheet and spends $20 in 3 months.
Can I stick with these to a question? Prema Sankirtan mentioned about what he told me what he used to say. I was just wondering if you use it still or if you recommend it, you'd be using it well. You know, the big shots give 100,
yes.
The sort of guys
always.
So are you a big shot?
No, businessman. Yeah. I usually tell them, businessman. Now we're talking, let's talk rupees. I tell a businessman, give 1,000, you know, or owners of companies, if you're just a regular business guy, you give 500, and the students and the usual workers, you just give 100. And then the 100 comes real fast. I mean, it comes so fast, you know, you don't know how fast the money is coming. You understand what I'm making? But if you think 100 rupees is like, whoa, you know, because it only costs, you know, 10, 20 rupees to eat lunch or something, then you will be struggling and fighting to get that 100. But if you tell him 1,000, then the 100 comes so easy. So it's all attitude. Everything is relative. Everything is relative. This is the material world. Everything is relative and everything is determined by your mind. Just like most of us here are not very affluent. We might spend a couple of $100, some of us might spend a couple of $1,000 a month. There are people in this world, they have an average, you know, expenditure of $10,000 or $20,000. When I had my business in Switzerland, I was spending $10,000 to $20,000 a month. It's not a big thing. It's just average upper middle class, you know. Make about $100,000, $150,000 a year, like that. That's just average. So everything is relative. There are people who are spending millions. So never think it's all the same, because it's not. So drop some numbers. Don't go too high, because people will not take you seriously. But mention $100, and you will get it. Mention 1,000 rupees. I've gotten it in India, just from regular business people. If you go to the Oberoi, or to the Hyatt, or to the Taj, or whatever, and you sit down, and you eat a regular lunch, a regular buffet, what do you think how much it costs? Anybody knows? No, because you don't go to those places to eat. It costs between 700 and 800 rupees plus 10% tax. So you're spending 900 to 1,000 rupees on a lunch, which is less than what you're getting out here. You might think, wow, but that's $20. What do you get in the States for $20? You don't get even in. You don't even get a seat. You don't even get a chair in a good restaurant if you tip the waiter $20, right? You don't even get a good seat. What to speak of food? So it's all relative. So don't be stuck up on numbers. You have to expand your mind. And if you're asleep, you have to wake up, because this is the money part. And this is where it's happening. You're first, second, and third. Yes. Okay, second.
Is it good to have a round number? I mean, if you ask for $5, is it easier than to ask for $4.75?
$4.75, forget it. $4.95, forget it. Round numbers, round figures. Make it easy.
So 100 rupees, 200 rupees?
Yes, round figures. 110, 125, very difficult. Make it round, make it easy. Round it off, either up or down. Make it easy. People will like it. Yeah.
Other question, many times people now, maybe it's an excuse, maybe not. They say, oh, I only have credit cards. Can you accept credit cards?
Yeah, in most of the countries, we can't accept credit cards. It's possible. You have those machines, you know. Or you can also get from the credit card company those papers. And then you have, you just have to take their card and rub it off with a pen on the back. So that also works.
You're taking, what do you?
Usually not, you know, in most of the countries where I live on the street, there is ATMs all over the place.
Yeah.
So I just walk them to the next ATM, withdraw money, or I distribute next to the ATM. So they say, I don't know money, no use to that, that's it. Okay, all right, you know. Because for them it's an excuse, they just want to go off easy. But if you do it in a nice way, then you just go and draw some money.
Other thing that some devotees just say, oh, just give some donation from your heart.
No, that doesn't work. That's lame.
Yeah, you know, like the book is $5 and then just give $1.
From the heart, I don't have any heart. How can I give you from the heart? Many people, they'll say, I don't have any heart. I'm not going to give you anything. You have to convince me. Why should I give you money? Oh, it's nothing, it's just nice, and this and that, and look at the birds, and at the sun, and, you know? That doesn't work. It's not the 60s anymore. We're not sitting in a park, you know, playing on a guitar, having flowers in our hair, you know, and smoking hashish. These times are over. It's finished. It's a different world now. People are moving. They're working. They're doing stuff. And they want to know a good reason why I should take this book, what's in it for me, what do I benefit, how much I have to give. They don't like this uncertainty. Also, people don't like to give too little, because that's really inconsiderate. You say, oh, just from the heart, you give whatever you like, you know, like that. And then they give you a dollar. And then you say, no, but you should give something more. I mean, it makes them feel like a fool. And it makes definitely you look like it. Because that's the worst thing you can do. Tell somebody, yeah, anything, just any donation, you know, anything you like. Oh no, this is no good, you know. Like they do, like the rickshaw drivers sometimes. You give whatever you like, you know. And then you give him 10 rupees. And then he doesn't even want to touch it, you know, he throws it at you. That's really bad. So that means we have to know these things, the do's and don'ts. You have to learn this. There's no way around it. You can't avoid the money topic. As much as you're spiritual, as much as you're detached, as much as you're renounced, you have to know how to deal with the money. Because when it comes to money, the humor stops. Right?
In your experience, is it better to devote to clothes? Sense that they're getting something valuable or that they're giving for a good cause?
The first one is better. Because the good cause, they might think it's a good cause, they might not think it's a good cause. It depends on their perception. Sometimes they say, if I want to give to a good cause, I give for the starving kids in Africa or somewhere, you know? I really do some charity. But what we're doing here is really based on the books. That's why all these techniques of showing people pictures of starving children and a couple of cows on a field, you know, and some books or this or that, and give money for charity, is just plain old cheating. Because it's not what we're doing. It's not where the money is going. And we know it, and they know it. So if you want to be a Brahman, you have to be truthful. If you are not truthful, you can't be a Brahman. Now if you're saying, okay, this is just my business, you know, and everything is fair in love, business, and war. There's no rules. There's only one rule, there is no rules. Then pull off your Brahman thread and say, I'm just going out to make money. I accept that, fair enough. But if you want to be a Brahmana, and book distributors are meant to be the Brahmins, they're meant to be the teachers, the preachers, to educate and illuminate society, you have to know what is truth and you have to know what is untruth. So don't talk about farms and starving kids in India and great food for life programs if all you're doing is once a month or once in a blue moon, when you have some leftover prasadam, you give it out to some bums on the street. That's not food for life. That's not feeding the poor. That's not qualifying as a, you know, charitable program. If you have a charity, you're registered as a charity, you do food distribution, prasad distribution on a daily or a weekly basis, you have accounts, it's actually running, it's an established program. And the money you collect is actually going to that program, and not into your own pocket or into the temple for their expense, then you can use it. But otherwise, no. And you've seen it yourself. If you say something and it doesn't have any truth to it, there is no punchline. It's just like, you know, it's just lame. Whoever has tried that, speak about the farm and the kids and the food and the cows and the this and the that and the other thing. We've all tried it, right? Have you ever tried it? No, you're a nice guy. The Aussies are very honest. They're very honest blokes. But most of us have tried it. How did it make you feel?
Terrible.
Terrible. Yeah.
I just want to add one thing about the people buy the devotee. So the first thing is that you have to be convinced, first of all, and in the back, to have a very solid spiritual practice. I mean, to convince that what you are doing is for the benefit of the person, you have to be truly and deeply convinced of that. And, you know, Krishna is doing the rest. I mean, Krishna is doing everything, he's not doing the rest. Krishna is doing everything. But if you are convinced, and you are addressing the people with this conviction in your heart, then the people are convinced. Very often, because we are presenting as missionary, the people ask, what are you doing? What do you do? Because they have the idea of a missionary who is feeding the children and gives, you know, builds houses or drills wells, etc. They said, we do so many things, but we do two things that the other missionary don't do. One is to explain to the people why they are hungry. Because if you're giving just the food to the people, after 2 or 3 hours, they are hungry again. So, you know, you miss the point. And the second one, which is the most important, we are sharing our happiness to the other people. And the happiness that we are, you know, showing is within the book you have in your hand. This is very important, just to, you know, to focalize. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Yes.
Yeah, can you just hold on for responses a little bit and explain a couple things?
Sure.
There's where's that balance where you can milk them as much as you can without frying them for the public?
You can what?
You want to milk them as much as you can. So if they make the benefits, you can distribute many books. At the point of not frying them, before you answer the question, I see devotees, they get a really nice donation for a book. They said, well, can you give one more? They give another 20. And they said, well, can you give one more? And I'm cringing like anything. Oh, my God. and the guy will give another one. And the guy has no problem, he's mine, but I'm cringing like, you know, like, I can't do that. But so my question is, because I haven't tried that so much, where's that balance, do you think? I mean, you probably tried it more because you're...
You judge a thing by its result. If you see the person walking away blissfully with two or three books, having given $40 or $60, fine, perfect, all good. But what happens a lot of times? The person feels that this person took advantage of me. You know, the person may be a little slow, maybe a little bit just timid, shy, you know. And the devotee, that's what they used to do in the past, you know. Just take advantage of those people. And they just hammer them and really go in and take as much as they can from them. And it destroyed our reputation. It gave us legal problems. Entire countries, book distribution became banned. ISKCON became illegal in some countries because of such practices. So then the question is it worth it? Was those 20 or 40 bucks worth it, this result? Or is it worth it if this person gets pissed off and gets turned off so badly that he will not look or talk to a devotee in his entire life? Because he knows that this person has cheated me. Not out of, you know, haphazard mistake, you know, but consciously, determinedly cheated me out of my money. That person will tell it to 20 or 50 people. So then, was it worth it? We have to ask ourselves that. You can always oversell or undersell. And you make the experience, but you can always even it out. So you have to develop this sensitivity. That's why we have to chant good rounds in the morning. That when we contact the super soul, Krishna will tell us, hey, this guy, push him a little more. You can always ask nicely three times. And then, if they say no, it's no. If they say yes, it's yes. Sometimes people just keep on giving. And you keep on giving the books. And in this way, you know, more merrier, happy. It's all good. But a lot of times where you do it just out of your own greed or your own attachment to result, then the exact opposite happens. So you have to judge it by the result. I have seen devotees give a person a book, getting a good donation, and then they say, hey, wait a second. And they give him three more books for free. And the person becomes very disgusted. Because for him, that one book, which had a value of $20 or $50, just now has a value of $2 or $3. So you've just killed it. You've just destroyed this person's appreciation. Also, sometimes people give you a good donation, and if you're grateful, they're very happy about that. But if you just continue to work them, then they feel like that they have not given enough, you know? And they don't like that feeling. Because it makes you feel bad. It makes you feel like a schmuck. And nobody wants to feel like that, right? That's why a lot of times, even when you get approached by devotees for donations, you rather not give anything. Because you know, even if you give them 50 or 100 rupees or whatever is reasonable, they will ask you for more. Why? Because they don't know how the game works. So to be a gentleman or a lady means you're considerate. You're considerate to people's feelings, to people's emotions, and you know what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. So judge a thing by its result, not by the interaction, and not by, hey, I made $500 more today here. Yeah, but these $500 may have cost you, you know, a whole lot more. The Japanese have a saying, there is nothing as expensive as a free gift. You understand that? So when people come and they want to give you a free gift, you have to know this is going to be an expensive one. Who else have a point? Yeah.
Say if I'm walking on a road, I'm a non-devotee, and someone comes with a book, and I'm convinced, I'm impressed, but I'm from a middle-class family, and I ask what is the cost of the book, yes. How much it took to make it. And then at that time you cannot say more. Like,
you can always say more. You can say 100 is usual, but some people give 500, some people give 1,000, and it's true. Just be truthful. And then you get your 100, and you're happy with that, and he's happy with the book, and everybody walks away, and you move on. Don't be attached. I'd rather sell 50 books like that than to go for the one or two people who give that big donation. because I'm a book distributor. I'm not a collector. I'm not out there to make big amounts of money or to meet the big people. For me, all the people are big people. We have to value everybody, and we have to value everybody's contribution. Sometimes you have people, they say, yeah, I can give you a contribution, and they pull out a couple of dollars. And if you're like, ah, you know, then that makes them feel bad, right? But if you're like, wow, thank you so much, then that makes them feel good. And the next time they'll give again, because people meet us time and time again. Like that brahmachari who went door to door. And the person said, just wait a second. And they went to the kitchen and they got the ashes. And they poured the ashes into the begging bowl. And then when the brahmachari didn't get upset, then the person said, why are you not getting angry at me? Brahmachari said, you know, I've come to this house many times and nobody has ever given me anything. So you're the first person who actually gave me something. So today you have started the process of giving. And that's wonderful. You see the difference? So be appreciative. Book distribution means you start people's spiritual lives. You are Krishna's representative. This is very important. This encounter is crucial to them. Because it determines whether they're going to be around in this world for a few more kalpas or whether they can actually go back to Godhead in some, you know, considered amount of time. Who else had a point? Question, yes?
Isn't it better to tell a white lie and get them to book?
What is a white lie?
Well, sometimes I find that when I talk about charity, they appreciate it. But sometimes I see people are attached to that kind of thing.
Why are they attached to it? Because you're attached to it. Because you're walking around in crutches, or you're sitting in a wheelchair, and you think you can't, you know, walk. But you can walk. You got 2 feet, you got 2 arms, you got a head, you can speak. So why you need charity?
Well, it works. It just works.
There's so many things which work. You can sell drugs. It works. People give you money. Big money. It works.
But if they get the book in hand, I don't think anything else matters.
No, it does. It does. Because if you are using crutches, after a while you become so addicted to those crutches, you can't walk without them. And you'll be crippled for life. I have seen devotees who by white lies and charity lines have become crippled for life. I've seen many devotees, hundreds of devotees. I've been around since 84. I've seen hundreds of devotees who went into collecting and they're not here anymore. How many do you know who are not here anymore? Big names, big amounts of money, big this, big that. And where are they? So, is that worth it? It's not worth it.
That is a rule, but generally sometimes people will say, well, what kind of charitable things
do you need charitable things? You don't need. We're distributing knowledge. That's the biggest charity.
That's what I told them.
Yeah.
But if I add, you need to do something extra.
You don't need to add anything. The books are perfect. Just work on the books and forget about everything else. Otherwise, people will want to know, oh, I'm coming to you, manager. Otherwise, people want to know, well, how many kids are you feeding? How old are they? Where are they? What are you feeding them? And then you're in the gym, you know?
Well, if you know all that, sometimes you grow.
Yeah, but you're wasting your time, my friend.
A girl once asked me, well, it's, you said, well, it goes to charity, right? And I said, yeah, which technically is true.
Yeah, so I tell them the charity I'm doing here is for you. Because the person who is poor is you. You're getting the charity. And they're, wow, so actually I'm giving money to myself. Yeah, that's what it's all about. You're doing yourself a favor. Be kind to yourself once for a change. How does that sound? Try that as a line. Because charity starts at home. If you are not well, how can you give in charity? But I get the point you're making. Sometimes you try this, you try that, and after a while you will see how all these things don't really fly. They don't really mean much. And if you're saying a mantra, you know, 396 times a day, you want it to stick. You want it to be good. And you don't want it to be material. And you don't want it to have any mistake or anything where they can catch you and nail you. So see what works for you. But if you're not doing it and you're not doing the charity thing, it's not going to work because you're pushing your luck. and you'll run out of good karma eventually, and it's going to bite you in the ass big time. And I don't want it to happen to you, because it happened to so many. And they thought, hey, I'm skillful, I can pull it off, I can collect for this and that and the other thing. And at the end, what happened? They were out there collecting for themselves, because that's what they were doing in the first place. But in the first place, they were doing it as so-called surrendered devotees, they were doing it for the temple or for the charity. But later on, they saw, hey, they're not using the money for what I'm telling the people on the street, so I can as well do the same for myself, right? Isn't it? If I'm using a white lie for the temple, I can also use a white lie for myself. You know how many people have started to just sell stuff for their own sake, for their own benefit? Okay, we gotta move on here. Other points. Yes, you had your hand up.
I want to tell you my experience in America, in New Orleans, and in Spain also. In New Orleans, the devotees, they collect for life, they sell cups, and in the same time, when they give, this is my friends, because I am not American, I cannot make this, but I tell this experience, they sell cups, and they tell big story, blah, blah, about food for like it's true, and además it's true, they have all the papers, everything is legal.
So what's your
after
question?
This, when they give big donation, they give one Bhagavad-gita. Me, I cannot make this because I am not American, but I stay in the street with the cars, giving food for life papers, this, and they give donation, and when they give big donation, I give good.
And then, do you use some of that money for food for life?
Yes, I must give to the temple.
So then it's okay.
Something is for me, something is for the
team. Yeah, and I know some of these devotees who are doing that program in America, and they have established charities. They have registered legal charities. And they're giving a fixed amount of their money to Food for Life and to food distribution. But then again, you have to know, am I a charity guy who shakes a can to make some money for some charity, or am I a book distributor? That you have to answer for yourself. I can't tell you what. This is the course on book distribution. This is not the course on fundraising or Food for Life or how to raise a lot of money. You have to know for yourself what you want to do. If you want to make a whole lot of money, there is a different seminar for that. You know? But you have to pay the price to attend that seminar. It's going to cost you more than 4,000 rupees. But I can give you that seminar. But it's a different topic, right? Right now here, we're studying how to become book distributors. If that is what interests you, because that's the topic of the course, that's what you have signed up for. If you want something else, we can do something else at another time. But not now. Now we discuss about books. Okay, we gotta move on here.
About this point, it's very important to understand one thing, that first we said that we are selling ourselves. And the important thing is that the person must understand that we are giving something. Not they are giving something to us, but they are receiving something. So whatever we say, they must have this impression. I mean, it's not an impression, it's the reality. We are giving Srimad Bhagavatam, which is worth, there is no price for that, you know, or Bhagavad Gita, whatever. So whatever they are giving is not enough to cover what we give them. So we have to give this impression to them. Like, back to Italy, you know, usually the people give a donation to a monk. I never used the word donation. Before I used it, but because English is not my mother language. Never mention donation. Contribution. Contribution is the word I use. And if they ask to me, what are you doing? I say, you know, we are explaining if they want to know. But mainly we are sharing our happiness. And this is what this book is about, to become happy. And this happiness comes from serving God. You know, this is if they want to listen a little bit more. But the point is that we are giving them. We are not taking from them. We are giving them. And we are giving them an immense value.
Yeah.
Immense. It's just beyond our imagination. We cannot even imagine how much we are giving them. So this is the conviction that has to be there. Otherwise, you know, if we are there to ask.
So the secret of success, as Anakadunda Prabhupada was saying, is you become a pure devotee. You can ask people for anything. They will do it. Just like Prabhupada.
You
see Prabhupada. He asked people, surrender. Give it a life.
Prabhupada is Prabhupada, me I am me.
Yeah.
Me I am not Prabhupada.
No, but we can learn from him example. Become pure. And
if we give you.
Who is pure?
Who is pure?
The one who is following the pure devotee, that is pure. As long as you're thinking, I'm making so much money for myself, it will be a hard struggle. As soon as you actually agree to give Krishna and Prabhupada and the books and the mercy to others, money will come, money will flow, you will not know what to do with the money. What would you do if I give you $1 million right now? What do you do with it? You couldn't do anything with it. Because you got no... What do you do? You just give it to the deities or to the guru. But deities and guru don't need money. They want our love, they want our heart. Right? The temple already is going on. The deities are eating, the deities are getting worship. Who needs the money? Can somebody answer this question for me, please? Because I'm not getting it. Everybody seems to be really, you know, money. Who needs the money?
Me.
You need the money.
Yeah, I need money.
How much money do you need?
I need...
How much money do you need?
I need my one house. For this, I need.
How much do you need per month? $500? $1,000? Is that a lot of money? That's not a lot of money.
Nothing.
So? It's not a problem. Right?
So the summary, or I mean, not summary, but Prabhupada said, if you destroy my books, you never have to worry about watching.
Yeah.
I'm really taking shelter of that, and I found it 100% always worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One time I remember distributing a book to somebody, said he doesn't have no money. I'm like, Super Soul said he must have a book. I spent like 10 minutes on this guy trying to convince him to take a small book. He finally took the book, and I said, just give him one penny. I'll give him one penny, that's it, no problem. And he knew that it wasn't attached to the price. He pulled out a wad about that big of money and just gave him one.
Yeah.
It happened all of this time in that particular example. But the principle that if we give, Krishna is behind the scene, he'll give back. 100%.
Krishna is no poor man.
Maybe not right away, but...
He's the husband of the goddess of fortune. There is enough money to go around for everybody, including us.
Sometimes, maybe his plans are different. He may change it.
Yes, why? Because he sees that we have a small mind, that we have a scarcity mentality, that we are scared, or that we are selfish, or that we are immature, or that we can't handle money. Just like the world. Sometimes... Yeah, maybe. Just like, if Krishna would give us the whole world, what would we do with it? We can't even take care of, you know, a few cows, and a few roads, and a few garbage cans. Why should Krishna give us the whole world? We'd be stupid of him to give us the whole world. We can't even take care of our room or our suitcase. So, let's first start, you know, taking care of the basic things. Then Krishna will give us more. I know people who are making big six-figure money and they never have enough. They're always in debt, they're always crying, they're always in scarcity mode. And you can be a regular Joe and have a regular job and be happy. It doesn't mean that necessarily if you're poor, you're happy. But it means if you understand that whatever you've gotten is by the grace of Krishna, and you use it for Krishna's service, you can be happy. Even with nothing. Or you can have so-called everything, and you can be very miserable. Money is a big topic. We can get more into money at other stages. We got 20 minutes before lunch. I'd like to get a little bit into the psychology, although we already discussed psychology. To some fair extent.
One which I heard in the Bhagavad class, that if you are sincere in Srimati Radharani, it becomes your treasure.
Becomes your?
Treasure.
Treasure. Okay, that's a nice one. Thank you for that. So use of praise. Use of language and elocution. Praise. What's the most dear thing to every person in this world? Besides money.
The name. The voice.
The name means what? Themselves.
Me.
Yes. I am the most dear person in this world to myself. So by saying their name, by praising them, by commenting on them, they feel very good. Now in some countries, you can go up to a person and say, hey, nice shirt, you know? That works in America. If you use that in Switzerland, people will punch you in the face, or they will think you're stupid. It's cultural context, you know? If you do that in India, do people like that if somebody comes up to you and says, nice watch or nice shirt? Maybe in Bombay or Delhi. Do they like that in India? You don't make these kind of comments, right? Huh? It doesn't fly. You understand? It's time, place, and circumstance. So not because you think it's a good thing to say, you have to see the result. You have to judge a thing by its result. So praise people. Don't overdo it. Don't butter them up. Don't tell them, oh, you're a gentleman and a scholar, and you're the most generous people of all there is. And the person goes like, what? What are you talking about? You know, it's too much. You're too much. You know, I don't want to deal with you. You're artificial. You're unreal. Keep it real. Keep it basic. Use little things. Language, elocution, the way you talk. You know that people, when they perceive you on the street, 55% of what they actually perceive is not what you say, but is your body language. Just so I get the numbers right, if you want to write it down. Yes, 55% nonverbal skills, which means your appearance, your gesture, how you move, like that. That's 55% of what people actually, the information they actually get. 38% is the tone of their voice, of your voice. How you say things. The tonality, the all the, you know, sound and stuff you put in there. And the actual thing you say accounts for 7% of what people perceive. It's pretty amazing, isn't it? 93% is external, 7% is actually what you say. So much it is important in how we say things, not so much what we say. Priya Bhanu, the same boy from Germany, used to go up with people, to people, and he used to hold a carrot in their hand, in his hand. And he used to take a bite off, and then he would go to the people, like a microphone, and say, you want the bite? He'd say, you know, we're Martians, we come from this planet, and we're here, and we're collecting money for the ants in Africa, and we're giving these books. He was saying things just as a joke, which made no sense whatsoever. And people would just smile and laugh and give him money and take the books. Because they knew it was just, it was just drama, it was just performance. So it doesn't matter so much what you say, but how you say it. Okay? But don't overdo it. So we're coming to the use of humor. Humor, again, as mentioned before, is time, place, and circumstance. Don't make jokes at other people's expense. Make jokes about yourself. That's the most convincing. If you make jokes at your own expense, people like that. But if you make jokes about others, you know, politically incorrect jokes, socially incorrect jokes, racist jokes, sexual jokes, whatever, it doesn't work. Because people, it may work with, you know, the more base class of people, or more, you know, less refined people. But people who have a bit of class, a bit of knowledge, they will not like it. They will get disgusted by it. So build up your own humor, your own repertoire. It doesn't have to be very complicated. It can be very simple. Just like you go up to people, you hand them a book, and you say, we call them books. You don't get it, right? Most of you are not English speaking. You give somebody a book, and then I tell them, we call them books. You know? You get it? It's a joke. You're meant to laugh. If you don't get it, don't wait till the person feels stupid, but just carry on. If person don't buy your joke, just move on. Right? And don't milk a joke till it's dead. Just move on. Just make your presentation. You can say a few things, but don't be too funny or too humorous. But it helps to break the ice. It helps to make the person feel good about things. Because it's a rough world out there, you know? People are struggling. Life is hard. They're facing reality on a daily basis. So have a bit of humor. Nobody wants to see a sad, sulky, depressed face, you know? They like to see you smile. Again, And if you want to see them smile, make some jokes, some humor. Now there is, you know, a million and one jokes which I can tell you, but I won't, because you have to buy the book or the video or the tape. No, because you have to make your own jokes. Because it has to come from you. It's got to be you, right? Because the same thing, like with mantras, you have to have your own repertoire of jokes. Like I tell people, this is for all the people who know how to read and write. Now you might think that sounds very obvious, but actually it's something a little bit, it's called irony, you know? Irony is like mild humor. It's a mild joke. It's not ha 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 ha, oh, that's really good. But it's just little irony, you know? It's just, it makes them, you know, makes them tickle a little, it makes them smile a little. That's what's required, not the other type of, you know, humor, where it's like what they talk in the bar, you know, when they sit on the, there, no, that's not required. So, then, any questions on using praise, language, or humor? Yes?
Just, I'd like to go back to this concept of, you know, having a lot of stock jokes and everyone can be aware of a lot of stock mantras. Like, can we touch on that for a minute?
Yeah, what do you like to know?
Yeah, just that you're saying when I was 15 years old and I started learning about book distribution, I watched everyone, I heard their mantras, I wrote them all down.
I'm still doing it.
So that, why?
I'm watching you.
So I would,
I'm watching you and I'm writing down in my mind how people perceive you, how I perceive you, what works, what doesn't work. You may overdo it. Are you just faking it? You know? I'm observing. That's the nature of a book distributor. When Arjuna is on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he's alert. He knows what's going on. You have to be alert. You have to be conscious. It's about chetta, consciousness. Finish your point, please.
I'm suggesting that this library of vast knowledge can be made available, and we can check out and see what works and see what doesn't work. This is my proposal.
Yeah, proposal is...
150 mantras a day, yeah. We can check out.
Doesn't work like that. There is some base mantras, some basic, you know, basic stuff is there. But that's about it. Because otherwise, you make those things available and people use it and they really burn themselves. You understand what I mean? It's like a scalpel or a gun. You don't just give it to Cho, you know, Tom, Dick, and Harry. Because it's something, you know, which in the wrong hands can cause a lot of damage. It will be revealed to you, but you have to pay the price. You have to undergo the training. You have to put in your effort, you know, your blood, sweat, and tears. You have to pay your 2 cents. And then eventually Krishna, in your heart, he will reveal to you how you can deal with each and every person in a unique way. And it's not the secret mantra or the secret line or this or that. But it's your own uniqueness which will be convincing. And you can learn from everybody, you know? If the flower lady comes in the park and wants to sell you a flower garland, you learn from her. If the rickshaw driver wants to screw you over for 5 rupees, you learn from him. If the person in the temple courtyard wants to sell you a book or wants to get a donation from you, you learn from them. You learn from each and every person. That's what it's meant in the Bhagavatam. And you have the story of the Avanti Brahman. He's going around and he has all these gurus. And he's constantly learning. This is a learning process. We're here to learn.
So that means learning what not to do also.
Of course, to the bigger part. But sometimes you have to experience and you have to see on your own skin what not to do in order to know what to do. Because we're not first class intelligent. We cannot just listen and believe. We want to try it out. And that's our nature. Then we have to make the mistakes. And we see how it goes. Other points?
Yes. Not about jokes. Or not true. Like my husband, he does this funny numbers. He goes to the one village and he says,
no.
You receive the book? And they say, which book? And they say, he doesn't show. And he says, do you know? And he said, what? And he said, you haven't known? You watch them. And he said, today everyone works. So we are doing this and that presentation as if the whole village is involved in some important project.
Sure.
That's not true.
It might be true because he's doing it. Why you say it's not true? He's doing it. That's his intention. If that's his mood and he honestly feels like everybody in this village should be involved and everybody should get a book, then that's true. Why you say it's not true? Because some people refuse to take? Yeah, that's reality. But for him, that's his aspiration. That's his desire. And that's why it's true. Because he believes in it.
That's what Prabhupada did.
That's what Prabhupada did. Prabhupada came to the West and he knew there would be temples, he knew there would be thousands of devotees, he knew there would be all these things. Only time is separating me. He was sitting on that bench in the park, talking to that man. So he was not lying, it was just not yet manifested. So in the same way, what is reality? What do we want it to be? That's our choice. It's up to us. We define reality for our own selves. Other points? Other questions? We got 10 minutes here, let me move on. So, how to read body language and physiognomy. This could be a whole seminar in and of itself. After a while you get the nick of things, you get the hang of things, you get a little more experience. The way you see people move and walk and talk and dress and behave, you know more about them. Who they are, why the way they are, and how you relate to it. If that means nothing to you, never mind, don't bother. Okay? If it means something to you, use it in Krishna's service. Any questions to that? Yes?
Can you give some examples?
Yeah. Just like there's 400,000 species of human beings. Out of them, very few are civilized. But, like, the truck driver is a specific species. The person which pumps gas in the gas station is a specific species. The guy who works in construction, or here or there, it's a certain archetype, a certain species. And if you know what's important to that species, and how to talk and behave in such a way that the intellectual and the student and the housewife and the businessman and the gas station attendant and the truck driver and the guy who walks his dog and the guy who thinks he's smarter than everybody else, that they feel comfortable with you because you appreciate them. You appreciate their uniqueness of walking their dog. And what a nice, you know, love me, love my dog. You have to appreciate the person, their characteristics, their attributes, their clothes. Don't overdo it. It's a subtle thing. But if you appreciate people and you give them proper respect, they will appreciate you, they will take you seriously, and they will, you know, buy a book. That's how it works. Because let's face it, how many people a day know they get up with the desire, I want to buy today a spiritual book. I want to get Bhagavad Gita. Once a year? Once a decade? What about all the other people? We make them take the books in a nice way. But if I think you're cool, what happens? Well then, you think I'm cool also, right? Because it goes both ways. You know? And you got a thing going on here. And if I'm friendly to you, then you're friendly to me. And then, hey, a friend asks you to do something, you do it, right? So you have to build that bridge. But always make sure you understand on which side of the bridge you are. And that you draw them into your program, and you don't join their program. We got 7 minutes here. Any topics on basic skills or psychology of book distribution, which are unclear, bewildering, disturbing? Yes?
I'm going to ask counter explanations.
Okay.
Is there some info about the tone of the voice, of modulation of the voice that you are asking?
Everything is important.
Somebody told me this, that when you ask for the donation, the salesman is trained not to go up in the voice. Can you give a little bit?
Yeah.
And I said,
so, Has everybody heard that? When you ask for the money, you don't say, and everybody now is giving some money. You know? It's opera. You know, it's dramatic. But you just use the same presentation, the same voice, the same tone, or you even go a little bit down. Like it's very, you know,
it's natural,
it's casual, it's the way it is, you know, the sun comes up and it goes down and, you know, people take the book and they give money and that's the way how it works. It's natural. But if you make it dramatic or you put, you know, you start speaking in a funny way, then the people, they become very, you know, disturbed. But if you're not disturbed, then they don't.
If you feel uncomfortable,
yeah,
they will be uncomfortable.
Of course. Because you feel that, you sense that. Huh? You sense that uncertainty, you sense that fear, you sense that anxiety. Other questions? The what?
Commission.
That comes later on in management.
Body language. Sometimes people shake their head and they lie.
It might mean different things, you know, like in India, shaking your head like that means a different thing. Even sometimes people say no, or they shake their head like that, but you know, no doesn't necessarily mean no. So it always depends what time. So you have to find out, specify. Sometimes no really means no, and you better get out of their way. But sometimes no means yes, and sometimes yes means no. So you have to try it out. But in general, you ask the person 3 times nicely, and if they still say no, you let them off with a smile. Thank you very much for your time, have a nice day, and you move on.
What about when you speak to a group of people? The first is very interested, then he asks to explain what he thinks, he doesn't take it, he can't say no.
That's specialized situations, we gotta deal with them this afternoon. Okay? Other points? Yes.
Yo voy a hablar en español y tú las traduces primero.
I understand.
Yo pienso que cualquier, bueno, con tal de que no sea robar, cualquier método es bueno con tal de dar un libro. Porque en España hasta se han vestido de Papá Noel y de lo que sea con tal de dar un libro. Y aquí, tú alguien te viene uniendo de estos y te dice una foto, vale, una foto, pero te coges un libro.
In so many countries, they're using so many different techniques and styles and strategies, and I don't want to discourage anybody. I can only speak from my own experience, what has worked for me. If you want to go out and do whatever you want to do, be my guest. It's your life, it's your future, it's your appetite. I don't waste my time and my energy. We're learning how to distribute Prabhupada's books here. That's what we're doing. Haribol, we are not here to sleep, and we're also not here to discuss about how to wear a Santa Claus hat, or, you know, wear big rubber boots, or paint their face purple and pink dots in order to raise money for this and that and the other thing. You can find out from other people who are doing that stuff. I can only teach you how to distribute Prabhupada's books, you know. Because all these other things, to me, it's like a disturbance in the mind. It just adds on to the noise. Yesterday I had a devotee who came to me. He tried to combine the program of book distribution and network marketing, MLM, you know, multi-level network marketing structure. And he had his nice little presentation, and I saw there was, you know, the pyramid with how many percent you can make, and the motor car, and the Honda motorbike, and the suitcase full of money. And I told him, this is complete rasa basa. You can't mix these two. It doesn't work. We're trying to give people spiritual knowledge, and you're trying to show them how you can make a lot of money by doing this. It's completely contradictory. People will take one look and they will say, this is just a joke. This is a sick joke. It's disgusting. Yeah, it's disgusting. It curdles my stomach. It makes me sick. It makes me want to vomit. But because they're devotees who are doing that, I don't want to comment upon it, and I'm not going to talk about it. Because if some people want to live their lives in that way, let them do it. For myself personally, I've always kept the two separate. If I'm doing business, like I have a business, I produce and sell music records, I do business, and it's business. And if I do preaching, it's preaching. Funny enough, preaching also generates money. More money sometimes than business. But it's either or for me. I don't mix the two. Because otherwise it's rasa basa. It's like you try to mix Italian food with Indian food, it doesn't work. It just becomes something different. Yes. Yeah, we'll speak more about maintaining oneself on book distribution and economy and how the pricing works out and pricing of the book. Right now the topic of here, of this morning, was basic skills and psychology. But since you all wanted to know about the money, we got into the money thing. Last point.
Psychology and related to money. Now, some of us are hung up, like myself. I used to live in the woods with hippies, and, and we would just, everything would be free, we wouldn't exchange any money. So then, now we're coming into this world of money, becomes a hang up. So how do we overcome this obstacle?
You can only overcome this obstacle by realizing that, number one, Krishna, Bhaktaram Nagatapasam, only by realizing that you can actually become free of being hung up. And that Krishna is not a brahmachari. Krishna is not a person who lives in the forest and has nothing. And every person is an individual. Like, I know Indian devotees, Indian, or I can't say Indian, but just a lot of times brahmacharis are people from countries where there's not so much wrong. Let's just put it in general terms. A lot of times, people who live a more renounced life tend to comment on people who externally live a less renounced life. That they are very attached, that they are very affluent, and that they are
enjoying.
Yeah, enjoying, or that you don't understand that, like in the West, if you're in America or in Europe or in Switzerland, to be so-called affluent here is just upper middle class. It's just a regular day of life for a European or for an American person. And that doesn't determine your sincerity, that doesn't determine your spiritual advancement, that doesn't determine your renunciation. King Prataparudra was very surrendered and very renounced, even though he was very affluent. So it doesn't depend on the externals. You can be a hippie, you can be a punk on the street, all you own is your little dog, your two cans of beer, and your five metal hooks in your nose and in your tongue, and God knows where you got your metal, and you can be as proud, as arrogant, as attached as you can be, right? So it's not necessarily because you got nothing that now you're, you know, better than somebody else. So this doesn't determine our renunciation or peace of mind or happiness. So to see everything in relation to Krishna will make us peaceful and will make us happy. And some people need more, some people need less. And Krishna is kind, he provides for everybody. And situations change, circumstances change. We go through life, we have different phases. So we should not be hung up on that. And the Brahmana is liberal. A book distributor. We are meant to be preachers. We are meant to be teachers. We are meant to be the Brahmins of society. If you see a Shudra who is having his sense enjoyment, do you get angry? Do you get upset? Do you feel threatened? Oh, this person is enjoying like a pig. This is bad. Then there is attachment. You know, all this anger, all this resentment shows our attachment. No. A Brahmin, no, it's okay, he's a Shudra. He's working hard, he needs his sense gratification, otherwise he's not motivated. A Vaishya, he needs his profit, otherwise he won't get up in the morning. A Kshatriya is on a power trip. He needs to feel in control. But as a Brahmin, as a teacher, as a preacher, we should see these things and be detached. Otherwise, if we're not attached, and we're still wondering, you know, what's my piece of the action, then we're not a Brahmin. And then we've got a problem. We can still be book distributors, we can still preach, but we have to know what our conditioning is. And we have to accommodate ourselves and situate ourselves
so that it will not become detrimental to our spiritual advancement. Because I see it all the time, you know? People who think they're something, not even better, but just something different than what they actually are. But we cannot be happy like that. We can only be happy. Self-realization means to realize one's own self, our own spiritual self, and also our material condition. So let's try to do that and serve Krishna and Prabhupada through our own unique ways, through our own unique contributions. And you all can be funny, you all can be charismatic, you all can be eloquent, you all can be skillful, you can be forceful, you can be shy, you can be humble, you can be all of that. Have you ever found yourself saying things which you never said before? And you're like, whoa, where did that come from? Or doing things which you never did before? Why? Because there is a different energy, there is a different potency which is working. So we have to get connected to that potency, to that energy. But even if you're not connected to that energy, to that potency, we still have to be in the realm of sanity. We have to be in the realm of what people perceive as sanity, as decent, as normal. And that's different according to time, place, and circumstance. But we want people to get a positive experience. So therefore we should learn what it takes, we should learn those skills, watch other devotees, learn from our mistakes, and improve. But it's a constant, it's a gradual process. It's not like one day, boom, you wake up and boom, it's happening. It's a gradual process. And even after decades, you can still improve a lot. So thank you for your time and your interest. And sorry if we went 6 minutes over time. We'll have prasadam right now, and we'll recommence the practical workshop session this afternoon at 3:30 sharp. Thank you for your attention.